Panda Talks has adult themes and uses adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
So I don't know how excited to be because we're going to see Super Mario movie tomorrow with McCade and my sister. And as I was reading about it, it's got a 50, as of right now, so this is the day before it comes out, right? It's got a 54% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is a critic score, but that.
Listen, I don't know how to feel about Rotten Tomatoes. It seems, what's good? Is more rotten, more percentage good? Is more percentage, is it golf rules? More percentage bad? Bad?
No, so.
And it never seems to line up with what I think. I always have a different opinion. You're doing the maths. I'm sorry
No, you're
to
fine.
talk to you while you're counting.
It's not that I'm counting, it's that I can't see.
Brady's playing a video game as per usual.
No, it's supposed to be like 100% means that it is certified fresh. That should be right. I don't know what's going on.
You do the maths. I'll get this episode a rolling. Welcome to Panda Talks. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Brady.
And we are going to be doing a book review. We've already reviewed the book, but we're gonna go more in depth with it because Brady and I had recently watched the 1920s Phantom of the Opera, the silent film. I can honestly say that was the first silent film I've ever seen. It was.
No, it wasn't.
What do you mean, no, it wasn't?
You had to watch that Buster Keaton movie with the train. That was a silent movie, wasn't
I don't remember. I remember it
it?
being ridiculous. It was great. Ridiculous in a good way.
I want to say like he, because he was a huge like silent film guy, and when it made the leap,
What was it called?
I don't know. It was like the train or something like that.
It's probably worth a Google.
But it was I had to watch it for I it was a one of my classes because I
The
was
General?
the general that I think that was it.
1926 film, so it came out a year after, so very possibly a silent film.
And because we watched Dracula, but Dracula, I want to say was like
No, they had.
40,
Oh,
like
well.
19, so it was like 15 years later.
They also had voice. It was a talkie.
Yeah, it was a talkie. Dracula was a talkie, but it was 15 years later, so it was some point between 25 and like 40 that happened. But yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it was a silent movie. That might make me terrible that I don't know for a
I don't
fact.
know why I can't remember it. I think it was, but I also feel like it didn't have the little caption cards. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't feel like it had caption cards. It felt more just like a,
Well, I think.
almost like a Three Stooges, where just like it just was music and then the ridiculousness of him
Yeah.
goofing around on the train. All right, I've looked it up, and yes, it is a silent film. So I remember I enjoyed that film. I don't remember it being a silent film, but it was good.
Yeah. It was pretty nuts 'cause a lot of the stuff he was doing was very, very dangerous, but I guess back in the day they weren't like,
Well,
"Oh,
that train
hey."
wasn't hauling as he. If no one knows what we're talking about, without giving too much away. It's just a guy on a train. Just,
I want to say it's during a war, but I can't remember what war. Civil War?
I can't recall that. I just remember him just shenanigans happen as he's on his train, so he's gotta like build the railroad and while on the train and
Yeah, he's like running out in front of it, throwing railroad ties and stuff out of the way, and
he gets he's stuck on the front, like Dudley Do Right almost. It's pretty entertaining. You can go watch it on YouTube right now. It's about an hour and 47 minutes, so 10 out of 10 recommend. But we're not here to talk about it. We're here to talk about a movie that came out the year before, The Phantom of the Opera. And it was great. My experience with... Well, let's start with you, even though I know the answer.
Hmm.
And I just have a longer answer than you. What was your experience with The Phantom of the Opera?
So the movie, it's funny because it was like black and white. I didn't know it was a silent film going in. I had no idea. I guess I could have looked at the year and thought, man, this is around the time. But it was really, I was impressed by it, you know? I mean, I did go in with like lower expectations, so I shouldn't be like, you know, blowing this thing up or whatever. But I went in expecting a basic 1925 movie or whatever. It was super good.
I should clarify my question. What's your history with The Phantom of the Opera in general? Like, how did you... like, what did you start with? How did you get here?
So, I'm going to be honest. Prior to, like, doing all this stuff, I thought that The Phantom of the Opera was always a musical or whatever. Because I guess it kind of is, in a sense of, like, in a silent movie, there's no talking. It's just there's a piano in the background playing music the whole time, and then words pop up. But I didn't know that The Phantom of the Opera, the musical, was like its own thing. I thought it was like one and the same, if that makes sense. I didn't know, like, I think it was once I met you and was talking about it, and you're like, yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote it, and I don't remember when he wrote it, forgive me, but it's not 1925, you know, that dude, I'm pretty sure, is still alive. But yeah, and so I didn't have any, like, relationship with as far as that goes. All I knew was that it started off as a scary movie, and then eventually at some point it became a musical. But I didn't know if the musical had any relation to the original.
It was written in 1986.
The musical?
The musical was written in 1986. Or written, released, whatever. 1986. I'm going to say debuted.
Okay.
Oh, premiered October 9th, 1986.
Okay. And the movie was 1925. We've discussed, because the dude... Fun fact, I guess, doesn't really matter. He died in 1927, so he got to see the movie.
Good for him.
And as far as I know, he liked it.
Hopefully. We'll jump into that. But I'm working on the ums. My whole history with The Phantom of the Opera was it was one of the first musicals. I can't say that. I had seen musicals before. I had seen The Sound of Music, and I've seen a ton of them, but it was at that age in life. I was 15 years old when you're really finding yourself as an adolescent, and at the risk of being a TikTok meme, I saw that movie and just thought, well, this is my personality for the rest of my life. Yeah. My friend at the time and her older sister, their mother was always having them try out for plays, and they sent me along, and I went and tried out for plays with them. Never got any callbacks, but it was, and I loved drama. We could get into a whole discussion about, like, my drama history, how it started, how much it meant to me, how it got me through school. But at the age of 15, I was being introduced to musicals, and this was, I guess, the first one that I wanted.
Sorry, that was my drink.
I wanted to watch over and over, and I became obsessed with it. I watched this movie every day. I remember taking hunter safety classes, and I would watch this before hunter safety classes started. And it just, I mean, Gerard Butler was in it. I was a hormonal teenager, and he was the hottest man I've ever seen. And I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast before, but I'm a real sucker for a good voice. A man could sing absolute nonsense, but if his voice is just beautiful, then I'll just happily listen to it, and it'll be my new favorite song. Ergo, Fall Out Boy's one of my favorite bands, and no one can understand what the hell Patrick's saying half the time. So yeah, I, damn it.
What? Oh, anyway.
I promise I'm working on it. It bothers me. So, that being said, I didn't know it was a book or a silent film either. I think I actually did know it was a silent film. Not a silent film, but like a film. But I thought it was like different. I didn't know much about it. I think I knew about it just as from the iconic picture scene from when Christine rips off his mask as he plays the organ and he has that hideous face. And I think I had only seen that just as a clip on like YouTube top 10 videos. We're talking about like classic monsters, and I want this to be known more as a classic monster because it's such a beautiful lesson that, and we'll get into this, but his name's Eric, not just Phantom or Opera Ghost. It's Eric is perceived as a ghost. Everyone thinks this is a ghost, but it, spoiler alert, he's a human, he's a man, but he's still a monster. Like, it's just so, yeah. I guess, classic Scooby-Doo, you know, monsters are really just men. There's no such thing as a supernatural. The scariest thing you can encounter is a man.
Mm-hmm. And the dude's a murderer and everything, but like,
oh, he's horrid.
It's, so the one thing I think that we are in agreement is, so in the musical, in the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, he's not very disfigured. Like, let's just put it bluntly.
I could live with that face. I could fully live with Gerard Butler with one quarter of his face looking like it got burned.
Yeah, it's like a little
or something. I mean, Zuko was also one of my early anime crushes, so.
Well, it looks like there was a summer where I went to a local water park with some friends, and being teenage boys, we completely forgot to bring sunscreen, and I got a horrible sunburn. And then after that, the sunburn like bubbled up and filled, you know.
Third or like a second degree burns.
Yeah, so it did that. And,
or would that be first degree?
First degree is the worst, isn't it? Or is, no, third degree
is the worst.
So it'd probably be second.
I think it's second when it bubbles. First is a regular burn.
I think a regular sunburn's first.
Second is when it blisters, and then third's when the skin melts off.
But that more or less is what it looked like, you know? It wasn't.
Looks like someone fucked him up with a coffee pot.
Yeah, literally, there's nothing too off about it. So it just always, like when you're like, it's not that bad or whatever. And then I watched it and I'm like, yeah, this is, this dude's like not even got a problem. but yeah, the guy in the movie and in the book, you know, both of them are very. In the book, correct me because you just barely finished it. The dude's face looks like a skull, right?
Yes, and it said that he.
Sorry, Eric, not the dude.
No, and we all know how I am. I've got on my rant about Beauty and the Beast and how his name's Adam, and we should call him Adam. I hate that it just in the movies he's just acknowledged as the Beast. It's like he has a freaking name. Let's call him Adam. And that's the same with the Phantom of the Opera. I kind of felt like, I mean, it's a little different because this guy's kind of a fucking asshole, so why should I care about him? But I like being able to just say Eric and talk about him as he is, rather than just like the Phantom and the Opera Ghost. And so, yes, it states that in the end, you're kind of, well, let's get into this really quick. So the book is written like it's an investigating journalist trying to piece together this weird occurrence that happened that left two people missing, one man dead. And it's really interesting because Gaston Leroux was actually an investigative journalist before he was a novelist. So you can really see that influence coming in there as he writes, he presents himself as a historian, but I mean, investigative journalism and historians, like, I'm going to argue not too far from one another. Anyhow, at the very end, he's wrapping it up. He gives you the whole account of this is what's happened. Now, at the end, now that we know that Eric is a flesh and bone person, not a ghost, here's what we can safely say about him, and kind of gives a rundown of his life. At forgive me. At one point, he's ugly, disfigured. His mom and dad hate him, so he runs away, and he joins circuses. He joins sideshows as the living corpse. And I've been listening to Aaron Mankey's sideshow where he talks about all the different people that were in the sideshow and like what their act was. I mean, obviously we talked about Tom Thumb. We talked about his wife, who was also a dwarf and or little person. One's offensive now. I don't know which one. I'm sorry, but
they're both fine. You can't call them the M word.
Well, I wouldn't, but anyhow, moving along. Yeah, I don't know, that was ridiculous, sorry. It talked about Tom Thumb, General Tom Thumb, and his wife. It talked about Siamese twins. It talked about acrobats. I can't remember what their name, but it was Wheeler. If you watch The Greatest Showman,
Anna Wheeler?
Yeah, Anne and W. He has a weird name, but anyway. I hadn't heard anything about a living corpse, but I looked it up anyway to see the pictures, to see like, okay, like kind of a reference. And there was a living corpse. He was Russian. He looked like a regular ass dude. He wasn't even like, you couldn't even be like, oh, he's skinny for a man. Like, because we know people are just like skinnier than normal. Like, literally nothing. Like, he just looked like a regular-ass dude. I guess his I didn't read the whole story behind him, but what I could gather from the just looking at pictures was I think he just could go into a death-like trance. And so they just stuck him in a coffin and said, hey, the living corpse. But, of course, all those sideshow, you know, that's a topic for a different day, because that's...
What's it like the trick, like a four-foot man eating chicken? So, like... This guy looks like he's dead, but he's actually alive.
That could be it, for sure. Well, was a long roundabout way just to say that, yes, in the book, he looks like a corpse. His eyes are sunken in that you can only see him in night, and then it kind of varies between they glow red and they glow yellow.
Yeah, so...
With love. Dear God, he had yellow eyes.
No, I just, like, as we were watching it, I was thinking to myself, I was like, you know what? What is that sound? I don't know. I keep hearing the sound.
Was it our son, or was it that weird thing that sounded like a frog? Because I heard a weird thing that sounded like a frog, but I also heard our son.
I mean, it very well could be the neighbor's dog, so I'm not going to rule that out, but it's just something weird. Anyways, so... It just kind of made me think, like, I'm really bummed. I don't know if this guy would have been it. But a while back, Universal Studios was They tried to relaunch the movie franchises for the monsters. So they did Dracula Untold with the dude that played Gaston as Dracula. And then they did The Mummy with Tom Cruise. And there was plans to do all of them. And I'm not sure if the Phantom of the Opera would be part of that.
That's what I was saying. Like, I've seen the iconic scene of the Phantom, the Ugly Man. Mm-hmm. Of Ugly Eric, but when you speak of classic monsters, it's not really included outside of Backstreet's Back Tonight music video. Everybody, you know, they had the Phantom in that, and I never got the reference. I'm like, I know they're all movie monsters, but this is just Phantom of the Opera, because again, I was watching this as a young teen, and
yeah.
Didn't, but now, like, that's what I'm saying. As a 30-year-old woman, I'm looking at this, I'm like, no, he deserves to be in the, like, classic monster Hall of Fame, right up there next to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Oh, yes, yeah, so, I mean, Victor Hugo was one of his Gaston de la Rue's idols. Like, so, yeah, you totally get Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde vibes from Phantom of the Opera. Not that he's, like, two different people. I mean, in a sense, he kind of is. There's Eric the Madman, and then there's the Opera Ghost, the Trickster, and yes, they're one and the same, but I think he could even argue that they're kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
It's... The book is... I know we've already rated it on our October book dump. You can go back and look for that. But, yeah, it just... The book's amazing. The book is... 10 out of 10 for me. Like, one of my favorite books. It's got everything in it. It has, like, mystery. It has suspense. And it even has humor. There's a whole scene with the managers, him playing pranks on the owners of the opera house. It's so funny to me. And Brady and I listened to it in the car while running errands today. And I just looked it on, like, this is one of my favorite parts of the book, where they're trying to figure out, trying to catch the ghost in the act of stealing money from them. And in the end, like, nothing comes from it. And they're just shocked and dumb
yeah.
by the events that take place. It's
when they just kind of blame each other and stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, it was like just funny to watch that old movie, and the makeup that they used was really... I was impressed by it. I mean, it was old school. Yeah, but it's like the guy came on screen and our oldest daughter, like, covered her eyes because he freaked her out, you know? Like,
well, and in the book he has different masks he wears, and one is made to look like a normal human face, and in the silent film he was actually wearing that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great. It was great to see that, but it was unsettling. It was that uncanny valley, like, yes, this looks like people, but I don't trust it. Something's weird with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, it just made me really wish that they would remake it, because I feel like if you say that to people, or people are like, oh, remake, I don't know, and I understand it, because I feel like if you were saying that to me, right? If you would have said that to me, I don't know how many years ago,
before
I would have been like...
Before you knew it was a book.
Yeah, before I knew it was a book, I'd have been like, oh yeah, we don't need to redo the musical. Why do we need,
That's what I was going to ask. Do you think you could even redo the movie with the musical out? Or do you think people would just expect, do the musical again, make a new musical?
Yeah, I think that's where I'm hung up, is I feel like if you said, hey, we're gonna remake Phantom of the Opera, it would be like people going, oh man, I think we're all right. Yeah. I think we have, you know, the...
You can't get better than Jerry Butler.
Yeah, I think we've nailed it.
Yeah.
But you know, that would be my concern. But at the same time, if you kind of showed like, hey, we're gonna do the creepy aspect or the scary aspect, because there's a lot to it. Not saying, you know, I'm not saying the musicals doesn't deserve to be there, but it's like I feel like whereas the musical's so new, and this version would be like a revamp of the old one. I don't think we would need to like address both of them. I think we could just take the one, redo it, but then I feel like you would have to market it right, because I feel like there'd be so many people that were like, hey, this is just, you know, like it's kind of like when Deadpool came out, you know, and everybody was like, oh, it's another superhero movie, let me bring my kids. But they tried to market as hard as they could, like, this is for adults, don't bring your kids, you know, you'll regret it.
And people brought their
And
kids.
people brought their kids, and it was still, you know, parents walking out in the first 10 minutes of the movie. So they would have to, like, I feel like if you remade this one, you would have to be like, all right, just so everybody's aware,
It's not a musical.
this is not a musical. This is 100% the horror movie, the scary movie, the monster movie. And then maybe you'd get some people, because I feel like it's a story that not everybody knows, you know, like it was, and you get the gist of it with the musical, like you kind of get what's going on, but at the same time you don't, because it's like you said, you recently read through the book. I kind of sat with you for some of it, but in the first like half of the play or first half of the book, whatever, you don't know if it's a ghost or not. You don't know if it's a person or if it's just a figment of whatever. Like you have no idea. And I feel like that's good to have, because I mean, you couldn't do it now because everybody'd be like, well, we already know it's a person. But then I'm like, if somebody doesn't know, if somebody hasn't seen if somebody hasn't seen the book or the old movie, then maybe you could get them to go along and be like, well, I guess I don't know, because I'm going off of the musical and I don't know how close the musical is.
You know what? I was actually thinking this. It's really interesting to see the influence that the silent film had on the musical, because there are parts that were not in the silent film that were in the like coming strictly like taking from the book. There are parts that were not in the musical or in the silent film that were in the musical. In the book, they talk about the first time Raoul meets Christine, he runs into the sea to save her scarf, her red scarf, and that's brought up the first things Raoul says to her when he meets her in the book is, oh, I am, she asks, who are you? And he says, I'm the boy that saved your scarf from the sea. And in the silent film, when Raoul and Christine meet, it's almost like they're just lovers. Like they've just never had time apart and now are being reunited. It seems very like things haven't changed between them. And then watching the musical, the play adaptation, not the movie adaptation, gets kind of confusing because we got two movies going on. But he once again introduces himself by saying, I am the man that, or I am the boy that saved your red scarf from the sea. And I mean, all that aside, it's really interesting because it was a silent film. So they, and we remarked on this, was that it was very close. The silent film was very close to the book. I think there's just one major scene missing, but all in all, it was very spot on. You didn't, I, it, it I don't just, yeah, it was very spot on. But that being said, obviously it's a silent film. They can only put up so many talking cards. So there's a lot of things that were changed because of it, and then watching the musical, you see those the influence that silent film had on the musical and how the musical followed those things, even though they had the ability to, for example, a major character, Joseph Buquet, part of the whole disastrous Carlotta singing like a frog, that it's interrupted by the hanging of Joseph Buquet and in the silent film, because obviously silent film, how could they represent, oh, she's singing like a frog. So they just, the big disaster instead of her singing was this man's death. Well, in the musical, yes, she sings like a frog, but also Joseph Buquet is killed right then and there, whereas in the book, he's killed very early on. And just little examples like that, I just thought it was fascinating that where the influences came from. Like, it was like Andrew Lloyd Webber just wasn't going to dismiss one entirely. He kind of looked at both and took inspiration from, and I, as a fan, really appreciated that. So let's get into characters real quick, because I wanted to talk about, as a horny little teenager, I hated Raoul. And reminder, I knew nothing about the movie or the book. Yeah, silent film or the book until later in adult life. It was all the musical for me. But I hated Raoul because he wasn't Gerard Butler. And it, like, wasn't just that. He just seemed so helpless. Like, he's supposed to be the hero of the story, and yet he's so helpless. He can't... It always seemed to me that Christine Daae was the hero. She saves herself, she saves Raoul, she saves the day. And I feel that way in the book. We can get into that in a second. But it's just funny because reading the book, I hate Raoul. So it's just funny that absolutely nothing changed for me with reading the book. I didn't feel like, oh, Raoul's the hero. He loves her so much. Honestly, he was worse in the book. I could not stand him in the book. He is such a little pathetic. He's an asshole. He's so awful. He's just, I mean, pathetic's the best word I can think for him, but he's really into that. He has the Madonna or the whore complex. He loves Christine. She rejects him. And then he's just like, oh, that bitch. I fucking hate that bitch. I'm going to give her a piece of my mind. And then the minute he looks at her, he's like, oh, I love her so much. Oh, how could I not love her? I'm willing to forgive her. And it's like, you like just questioned her virginity. And in questioning her virginity, you declared that you hated her. Like, and then, not to mention the great air quote rescue, he's so pathetic. So pathetic and annoying.
I don't want to cut you off, but...
Well, I was going to bring up the hand at the level of your eye, which I think you're going to get into.
No.
Oh.
My thought on his whole thing is, I don't know how it is exactly, but I don't know his upbringing or what. I don't know what any of these titles are. I don't, because he's what? The Vicomte de Chagny, whatever that. I don't know what that means. I don't speak French. I have no freaking clue what that means. But it's one of those things where I'm like, if he kind of seems like, if I'm just sitting back, just spitballing here, he's a rich boy. Like, he's never had. So I'm wondering if.
I can answer this for you, but answer.
I don't, because, like, I don't know, was he, like, something, did he go to war or something? Like, because...
No.
He just seems soft. Like, he seems
no,
like...
No, he's a soft little bitch. He's a bitch baby. His dad was the Count of
Chagny. Monte Cristo, yeah.
I don't know what Chagny is, just if it is a place like the Count of Monte Cristo. So, his father died when he was 6, leaving his older brother by 10 years... The Count de Chagny, so the Count of Chagny, which, granted, like you, I don't speak French. making him the Viscount or the Vice Count, the second in command, because Lord knows his sisters had vaginas and therefore cannot be trusted with the family affairs. Because that's how it was back in the day. So that's... He died at 6. The brother took good care of him and had his sisters help raise him. Then they hired a nanny to help raise him, but he took great pains to make sure that he was well educated. And then he joined a... Cannot think of it. He joined a ship, an Arctic exploration. And I want to say it was to find some sailors that got lost in the Arctic. But I didn't pick that up when reading this time. It's just like a faint memory of when you read it and you're like, oh, this is like the reference to the Terror, the ship that got stuck up there, because I think you were watching that HBO series at the time.
I think it was AMC.
AMC, but yeah. Either way. So, he didn't go to war, but he was a sailor for a minute. But no, he seriously is a soft little bitch baby. And I think, if anything, maybe it's because he had a nanny that doted on him too much, or his sisters doted on him, but I mean, his father died when he was so young, so they felt pity. That's what I would think. But he just, like I said, he's such a arrogant little self-centered brat that he, like, Christine comes to him and says, hey, this is happening. And he laughs in her face. And then she's like, well, if you're going to laugh at me, I'm not going to talk to you. And then all of a sudden he's just like, you bitch. You don't love me? How can you not love me? It's like, I don't know, maybe because she, like, confided something happening to her and you just laughed in her face. Like, it might have sounded ridiculous, but if you truly were her friend, if you truly did love her, I mean, hell, I'm telling Brady all these ghost stories that happen to me on the daily, and he's never once called me crazy. He probably thinks I'm crazy, but at the very least, he listens to me and says, okay, I believe you. And that's... I mean, especially if you're freaking courting someone, aren't you supposed to be nicer when you date? Because you're trying to hook up.
That's how it is.
But there's this part, so anyone familiar with the musical knows the famous line, your hand at the level of your eye. And in the musical, he won't do that. It's funny because the character telling him the hand at the level of your eye is Madame Jerry, which in the silent film and the book is actually a Persian man, known only as the Persian or as some word I can't pronounce that means sheriff from wherever they're from. It doesn't specify, it just says he's Persian, but I don't know which country in particular he's from. Mm-hmm. Persia wasn't a country, was it?
No.
Okay, just making sure. I'm going to be 100% honest and at the risk of sounding... Well, we all know how stupid I am here, but I don't know. When someone says I'm Persian, I don't necessarily know what that means. I know it's Middle Eastern, but I'm like, well, so what country?
Yeah, it's basically like Scandinavian, whereas Scandinavia is just that whole area. Like Sweden, Norway,
yes.
All that stuff is Scandinavia.
But like what part? Because obviously Middle East... But I don't know, because they talk about Middle East and then they go into war with Turkey and then they go into war with Afghanistan. Is that all just considered Persia? Is just like all the Middle East?
I'll look it up.
I mean, I was born... I went through elementary school in 2001 in Utah. Do you think they're going to teach me shit about the Middle East?
I mean, I didn't find out what Scandinavia was until I was like in my late 20s.
I feel like I knew what Scandinavia was, but like I said, unless it had something to do with bad people, the Middle East was not part of my growing up education, which is very telling about the time and area I live in. But yes, so the Persian knows Eric.
Persia is today the country of Iran.
It's just Iran, not like a big group? All right.
Yeah, formerly known as Persia.
Oh, look at that.
Well, let me see.
You look into that. So the Persian takes Raoul down to find Christine, and he keeps saying, you must keep your hand at the level of your eye. And the whole freaking time in the book is just, your hand, monsieur, your hand, like you're about to shoot a pistol, keep it at the level of your eye, your hand, non-stop. And, like, everything they go through, Raoul's just, he's a bitch. Ugh, my arm's tired. Well, then put the pistol, because they're carrying pistols in the book. Put the pistol in your other hand. Well, I can't shoot with my, like, just excuses, excuses. And then they jump into a room full of mirrors. It's called the torture chamber. And the Persian's like, hey, I'm going to find a way out of this. Give me 1 hour where you do not disturb me. And he's just sitting there being a whiny little bitch. And they're trying to be quiet. And he's like, Christine, Christine, yelling. And he just got on my nerves so bad in the book. Like, through every single bit. And he, like, again, in the book, his life is saved because of Christine. In the, was it in the silent film? I can't remember the silent film, but definitely in the play, Christine saves his life. Like, she is the hero of her own story. Yes, she's the kidnapped damsel in distress, but I also think that's very telling and something we could, like, even talk about later. I know we mentioned it in the last episode where she was stalked and kidnapped. And unfortunately, that's just the reality. More women are stalked and kidnapped and overpowered by men.
Yeah, so Persian Empire is, like, that whole area. It looks like it's got Libya, Egypt, and then it goes clear up over to, like, by Russia. It's using, like, old country names that I don't know if they exist anymore, because I'm pretty sure there's no Babylonia.
I don't think so.
Or Babylon.
I could be wrong. I'm not going to say anything. Like I said,
Middle Aria. East.
Middle East is not.
Cilicia.
Hey, wasn't that brought up in
Lydia?
A book I was reading on air recently, and I was like, I don't know what the hell this is. I thought it was trying to say Sicilian, but it's spelt wrong.
Maybe. Bactria, whatever. It's, yeah, the whole area. Right above Arabia.
Okay. Well, my education does not extend to that part of the world, unfortunately. I have been doing more research on my own, but obviously not well enough. Anyhow, any thoughts you'd like to share on... Oh, and Raoul's just as much as a stalker. He violates Christine's privacy time and time again, disregards her pleas of please stay away from me. And, I mean, she's going to mourn her dead fucking father. And he just follows her like a creep. Just follows her. Just so she'll pay attention to him. It's like, how about some, like, back the fuck up, dude? And then he gets her in trouble with Eric because he's jealous. And it's like, yeah, thanks. Thanks for getting me beat because you won't leave me alone. He doesn't beat her, but, you know.
He hurts her, so.
Well, not because of Raoul. He hurts her because she rips his mask off and steals his keys, but. Not because of Raoul. Anyway, do you have anything to add on him as a character?
Raoul?
Yeah, any of the characters, really. I just needed to get my hate speech out of the way. I cannot stand him. I never could.
It does go into, I don't know how much of it doesn't really go into it, any of it in the movie or in the play, but it goes into, like, in the book, how Eric is, like, a super genius. Like, he...
Oh, yes.
Because he goes to somewhere, like, where he meets the Persian is, like, so I'm going to guess Persia. But he basically works for this dude that, like, pays him to build this super, like, legit... Is it a house or a temple? I can't remember.
Sure, it's a palace, yeah.
A palace. He built this palace that's just, like,
For a sultan, it says.
Yeah, he builds this thing, and basically it's just like this, I can't remember, is it just full of puzzles and stuff or whatever? I can't even remember
what it is. You even listen to this part just right now on the couch with me.
No, I wasn't really listening.
Okay. I was going to say, you're like asking these questions, and I'm like, we literally just listen to this.
But
like the living corpse, you were right here listening with me.
But it's, I don't know, it, like, he's just super smart. So then he finishes it, and the guy basically tells him, he's like, hey, you're good to go, whatever. But then secretly he's like, I'm gonna kill everybody that worked on this. Like, these secrets have to go to the grave, more or less. And you find out at that point, like, Eric, he becomes super proficient at a certain knot that is used to basically strangle people. And then the rest of the, you know, like, makes more sense in the book, because he keeps doing that to people, like strangling them with the, I can't remember what it's called.
I can't remember what it's called either. In the
Punjab something.
Yeah, Punjab Lasso.
Punjab Lasso.
And in the silent film, it's just called the Assassin's Lasso.
And so he basically, he does that, and that's how he kills people. But then in the book, you're just like, dude, this guy is not someone to be trifled with. Because that's kind of the Persian's whole thing, is he's like, Raul, you don't want to mess with this guy because he is a killer. Like, that's what this guy does, is he kills. So it's, I don't know, that to me was more, it was kind of more of a payoff, because in the book you're like, well, he's just kind of like, or in the musical, he's just kind of this dude that, like, has killed people. But, you know, he doesn't necessarily do anything that's, like, really insane to anybody else. Like, he just hangs a guy, you know. He just pretty much has to be stronger than that guy to hang him. But, yeah, so in the book, he's, like, a super genius who has a penchant for strangling people.
Well, and he is a genius in the musical as well. I can't remember in the movie if they bring this up or not, but I mean, in the movie and in the musical, he writes an opera and demands that it be performed. Was that in the silent film, or am I making shit up?
I feel like that's there. In the silent film, he writes the musical, but I don't think he demands it be performed. He just performs it for Christine. He's like, that's what this, do you make, you're, well, this is inspired
you, by you. Kind you of talk thing. To Madame Jody, and she's like, he's a scientist, he's a musician, a composer, an architect, a designer. So she hits on all those. There's some weird shit going on in the movie, or in the play, especially the play movie, mm-hmm. Film, whatever. I always thought that, like, Meg Jetty was the love child of Eric and Madame Jetty. That was always the vibe I got between them. But it not brought up anywhere else, not even in the musical. Like, they're both interested in him, but it's very clear of, like, mm-hmm. no, she just kind of helped him out once and thinks and admires him, thinks he's smart. So, yeah, going back to, I forget where. Oh, so she brings that up, that he's just a super brilliant architect and musician. And then he writes his play Don Juan Triumphant and demands it be played. But then in the musical, they just the whole time talk about how shitty the music is. And they talk about, like, they even play it. You hear the music play. And it doesn't sound good. It sounds vastly different to the rest of the music in the film, or in the play, both. And I don't know if that's on purpose. I don't know if it's because in the book, Eric says to Christine, this is not good music. If you were to listen to this, you would turn ghastly white and like it's death music essentially. So, but I didn't know if like it was a shitty play, but they were just appeasing him and like agreeing to play it, or if he really was some sort of musical genius. Because they even talk about in the book how La Carlotta is like the most beautiful singer to date. Everyone knows and loves her. Yet the Phantom's like, she's the worst singer ever. Mm-hmm. But everyone else is like, no, she's great. And he just strongly disagrees. So I just some interesting thoughts as I often wondered, especially with the Don Juan Triumphant, like, is it really actually, I don't know music, obviously. So I kind of wondered, like, as far as the play goes, is it actually really shitty? But they don't dare say anything because their lives are on the line, or is it actually really a work of art?
Yeah, I don't know. It's because it kind of, I don't know. I kind of thought for some reason from, I guess from the musical, that song that they always play, I always kind of assumed that that was his song that he wrote.
Which one?
The main theme, the da 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 oh, da da.
No, that's just conveying the thoughts and the feelings of the main characters. Okay, well, so I know I brought this up before, but Brady's cousin wrote this book. It's called Good Books, Good Friends, Good Food. It's kind of a guide on how to start a book club, which is what I've always wanted to do. And The Phantom of the Opera is recommended as one of these books for a book club. So it has a little recipe to enjoy at your book club with this book. And it has some questions I thought we could go over really quick. And if anyone's wondering, the recipe you're to enjoy with it is a cinnamon roll. And I believe I tried this recipe, and the recipe itself didn't really work out for me. I've yet to find a good cinnamon roll recipe. It's like my quest.
Your croissant?
My croissant. So let's discuss some discussion questions. Do you despise or pity Eric, and why? I know I've asked you this the first time we read through.
I think it's both. It has to kind of be both because I don't like him because he's a sociopath, you know. He sees what he wants and he doesn't
absolutely.
He doesn't care what anybody else wants.
The Persian says he doesn't know the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah, so it's I hate him for that reason. I hate him that he just kind of does whatever he wants and screw how everybody else feels. But at the same time, you're like, okay, well, it goes to it at the end of the book where it's like his mom wouldn't even hug him. Like, his mom never kissed him because
makes me sad.
Because he's a freak. You know, his face looks like a skull. And so his mom won't give him a hug or kiss or show him any affection because he's got a deformity. And so you kind of, like, I feel bad for him for that sense, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, you're still a murderer, you know? Like, he still kills people just because they kind of get too close to him.
Yeah, I believe Joseph Bouquet just stumbled upon the torture chamber.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason he died, was just because he got too close to Eric. And it was probably by accident, probably just, oh, what's this? You know, I've worked here my whole life. What's this lead to?
And so it's kind of like a double, like, for that reason, I'm like, yeah, he's a douche, you know? Like, he's not a good guy for that reason. But I feel bad for him because of, the reason that his mom...
His own mother didn't even love him.
Yeah, his mom didn't like him. So you're like, all right, well, that sucks. So
I remember sorry, go on.
No, I'm just saying it's both.
I remember discussing this with you the first time we read through, and I believe my answer was I despise him because kind of the same reasons as you, but listening through this second time almost had me, I think I pity him more. And that's not to say, well, let me finish this thought first. I pity him more because the Persian states this man was an absolute genius, goes over his whole life and all the amazing accomplishments he does. He really is in Persia, he's known as the trapdoor lover because he's so smart. He's musically smart. He plays for Christine a violin, the same tune, just like her father, like just musically, just talented in all these areas. And the Persian or the author brings up that if his face would have been normal, these are attributes that would have been celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been seen as such a great man and had all these opportunities, but because he was ugly, no one would give him a chance. And I hate that. And it does like make me pity him a little more. But at the end of the day, a bad backstory doesn't excuse you being a piece of shit. I listen to a lot of, I shouldn't say this because I don't want to admit it, but I listen on Time Suck with Dan Cummins. He talks about a lot of serial killers. And a lot of those serial killers have really shitty pasts. Like, really shitty. Their dad abused them. Their mom abused them. One Albert Fish was beaten by nuns almost, like, on occasion. And, like, it's really sad. But at the end of the day, just because you're beaten or you're hurt, does it give you the excuse to go out and harm others? Absolutely not. It does not. And to disagree with that and use it as a crutch is bullshit. So it makes me almost pity him because how horrid mankind would be. I mean, today's no different, but especially back in... When was it supposed to be the era? Was it 19... I don't know what time period the book was supposed to take place in. I have no clue, but I mean, it was the time of the sideshow, which again is a whole topic for a different day, but it was a time where, oh, you're a freak, we don't trust you.
Yeah.
Which is damn shame. So that's where I land is I feel more on the pitying side the second time reading it. But again, you do not get a pass for being a monster because you were hurt. And it goes back to what I always say, monsters make more monsters, but that, no, you need to, it doesn't excuse it, doesn't excuse the crime. Discuss the difference between Christine Daae and Raoul Duchesne's relationship and Eric's relationship with Christine. Who do you feel loved Christine the most? Explain.
I'm going to say, to be honest, I feel like, and this goes into like more kind of stuff that we've watched as far as like different things go. But I'm like, to me, it seems like Eric is more in lust with her. Like he likes her, but it's not like he doesn't even really know her. You know, like I'm sure he like sits and he listens to her conversations, which they kind of go into. He listens to her conversations. He's probably watched her undress multiple times because he lures her in from
her dressing room mirror,
which, you know, that's a trap door, you know, going back to his nickname. But that's kind of the whole shtick about it, is like that's how he gets her, is he watches her in her dressing room and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, all right, well, that's weird. So I feel like he's more in lust with her. I don't know if that would be considered love. But just on default, because sounds like they had a childhood relationship, I would say Raoul loves her because of that.
I'm going to disagree with you. I felt Eric loved her more. I agree. A lot of it was probably lust because the man's never had a sexual encounter in his life. So a lot of it's probably lust. But I mean, in the end, like he wept for her. He was just constantly just like, just love me. Just love me like I love you. He did all this stuff for her. And maybe this is my lust for Gerard Butler coming through. But ultimately, in the end, she showed him kindness in all three adaptations, the book, the silent film, and the play. She showed him kindness, and he let her go because he loved her that much. He loved her so much. He saw that she loved Raoul that he's like, hey, well, you know what? Go have your happy ending, kid, because you're not happy with me. So in my mind, it was Eric that loved her more. I think a lot of lust was there. But I'm going to be honest, Raoul's love with Christine seemed more selfish. I mean, I know it's stupid because Eric's was also very selfish, but Raoul, like, I hate him so much. Did you have something to add?
No, I was just going to say something snarky, but I'll save it.
I'm all ears.
Nothing. I'm not going to say it.
Okay. What was the scariest part of the book? Which of Eric's traps and tricks did you find the most ingenious?
I don't know. Scariest part of the book is, to me, when they're... I don't know if I'd call it scariest, but the most intense, I guess, would be when they're going through the labyrinth underneath, and there's like the shade, which we looked up, and because there's a shade, they just describe him as a shade. It's like a dark figure going around, and basically he's just rounding up trespassers, it sounds like.
Basically, Gaston Leroux did not even know what he was about. We had to look him up. And it's like, oh, it was just to add suspense to this part of the book. And we were just like, well, it worked, but left us confused.
Yeah. So that was the most intense. And then what was the other part of the question?
Which one of his traps did you find most interesting? Has to be the torture chamber, right?
Doesn't have to be.
Oh. I thought it would be for you, at least.
Yeah, the torture chamber is... interesting. Holy crap,
we're tired.
I don't know, I guess that, because that's the only trap I can think of. Like, what other traps does he have?
Well, I think it just means tricks. Let's see, like, traps and tricks. Which of Eric's traps and tricks did you find the most interesting?
So I to me, this time going through, it's interesting listening and basically when he makes his plan to kidnap Christine, is he has like this whole thing planned. Like, he knocks out the people that are like supposed to be watching. Basically he plans it all out. And he's got like, I don't want to spoil it in case anybody is going to watch it or listen to it or whatever. I guess listen to the book or watch the old movie. But he like basically figures out, like, I'm sure he already knows because he's, like we said, a genius. But he kidnaps Christine and he like has it all planned to the freaking T. Like, he knows, oh, well, these people are going to get in my way, so I'm going to put them to sleep. Like, these people got to be asleep, and these people are going to be up here arguing about this, whatever. And so he kidnaps her right in broad daylight in the middle of the play on the stage. Just kidnaps her. Takes Raoul's escape that he was going to have planned. I guess I don't want to give away too much, but that whole bit where he kidnaps Christine and has it all planned out, That part to me is like the part where I'm like, dang, dude, he had it all figured out. He knew what he was doing.
My favorite part of his tricks is definitely fucking with the managers when it comes to, they're like, because he demands, oh, I hate this house. He demands an allowance and of 20,000 francs, and the managers are like, we don't want to pay that, and they're just trying desperately to find out how he's taking money from them. And he really fucks with them that way. And it's just, like I said, hilarious to me. And also the famous croak of La Carlotta. I absolutely, that's another, like, and it's a simple trick kind of revealed at the end, but it's, that's part of his tricks and traps I enjoy. And very last question, very quickly, what was Eric's greatest sacrifice for Christine?
In the book, it's that he lets her go and marry, what's the name? That's
Raoul. How do you forget Raoul's name?
Because I don't even know. I keep wanting to call him Julia, and that is a very specific reason because of the actor Raoul Julia. And so for some reason, all I'm thinking about is Julia. And I'm like, well,
he's described in the book as very feminine anyway, so.
Well, Raoul Julia, you know Raoul Julia.
I don't, but.
He's Gomez Adams in the Adams family with Angelica Houston. And.
Oh, hashtag my Gomez Adams. I mean, obviously, across the board, book, movie, play, it is 1,000% he lets Christine go. I mean, I don't know what your cousin or her friends thought when they were writing this. It's like, oh, all the shoes
I guess bought
her, letting her play pretend an engagement with Raoul for a week. No, it's, he let her go. I mean,
they're trying to think of like, well, when he, in the book, because he had a really good life in Persia and had to leave it because he was going to be killed, or when he had to leave his parents because he was a freak, or.
What does that have to do with Christine, though?
Is that what I just thought it said, what was his greatest sacrifice?
Well, now that I've lost the page, I'm fairly certain it said greatest sacrifice for Christine.
What the hell?
Yeah, what the hell? He's texting you this late.
It was my daily briefing.
Oh, mine's been going off at like 5 p.m. What was Eric's greatest sacrifice for Christine?
Oh, then yeah, that. Just letting her marry Raoul Julia.
All right, Kate, final question, because you're not paying attention, it seems. What, I want to know, 1, 2, 3, out of what's your favorite out of the three? Give them a rating if you want. Say, this one's my favorite, I hate this one. Rank them. Do whatever.
It would have to be the book, I think, because like, it's no secret I'm not that big into musicals. Like, I think they're fine, but I'm not like the end all be all. I did take theater and stuff, but I'm not a big musical guy. That being said, I like the creepiness factor. I like the scary movie feel. So I doubt this is going to piss you off because I don't know how invested you are in it, but I would have to say my number one is the book. My number two is the 1925 movie. And then my least favorite is
the musical.
Not saying it's bad. Like, it's perfectly fine, but it's, as far as like my taste, what I like.
I'm right there with you. Book is superior. Well, I don't even want to compare the three because they're all good. I don't think I could put one in front of the other. If I had to, absolutely. I do think book for me. Book is so amazing. It, and what I love about it mostly is the fact that it holds up. It holds up after all these years. It'd probably be better if I like spoke a wee bit of French, or if I understood like half of the freaking plays they refer to, but it holds up and it's fantastic. And I think the movie is so, the 1925 1925 film, it's just, it's so charming. I really do enjoy that one as well. But the musical also holds a very special place in my heart, even if I get older, I don't really care for Andrew Lloyd Webber's work that much. It's not, he doesn't come out with a lot of bangers, and that's going to piss someone off, but I don't care for a lot of his work. Sorry.
Well, I think it was funny to me, I guess surprising, but the other day we were talking about it just in the kitchen the day after we watched it, and we were like, so what did you think of it? Blah, blah, blah. And we were just like having a casual conversation, and our 6-year-old who had watched it with us, like, well, both of our kids that are, you know what's going on in the world, you know, because the baby doesn't really have any idea what's, you know, happening.
Our kids watched it with us is what he's trying to say.
Yeah. So we watched it with our kids, and it was, she just comes walking in the middle of our conversation.
Not walking, running.
Yeah. She runs in because she had heard what we were talking about, and she just goes, I loved that movie. I just wanted to tell you, like, that movie was so good. And I'm like, well, thank you for, you know, putting in your 2 cents. Like, and it was just kind of funny because we were just having a casual conversation about it. And then she's like, I loved it. It was so good. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm glad.
And the fact that she could pick up what was going on.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think she'd be able to understand as we read out the cards for her. And.
But. Yeah, no. Oh, so
she enjoyed it.
She loved it. She came in and was super excited. So I think that kind of, you know, you sit back and you go, all right, well, she's a 6-year-old, and she had to come in and tell us how much she liked it. So as far as that goes, I was impressed. I didn't think it kind of made me realize maybe our kid's ready for, you know, older movies, because we've tried to watch certain movies with her that maybe she wouldn't understand. But now she might be ready for them, you know? So we'll see.
We'll see. All right. Well, that's all I got for you today. Thank you so much for stopping by to talk Phantom of the Opera with us. Have you read, watched, listened? What are your favorite adaptations? If you've seen all three, let us know. And if you haven't seen all three or whatever, witnessed all three, I don't know what the hell I'm saying. We're tired. I got to get the hell out of here. Read the book, watch the silent film, and get the hell over it and listen to the music, okay? Like, there's something to be said about if you listen to the original Broadway cast. I should know the fucking actor's name. It's Michael something, but that original Phantom, like, the way he sings, I want to do a mashup between him and Gerard Butler, because Gerard Butler has the pipes of an angel. Can't get over it. Had my sexual awakening to that movie in his voice. Like, it talks about how Christine Daae is in such ecstasy when listening to her angel of music, and I am right there with it with Gerard Butler's voice. But when the original Broadway version pops up on my Spotify when I'm in my musical mood and I get that man, just some of the way he delivers some of those lines, just full on emotion behind his voice, rage and screaming. It's beautiful. I want to do a mashup between the two because it's just so, yeah, listen. I'd say listen to the Broadway version. You're going to get longer songs, and you're going to get much more emotion. Not to shit on Jerry Butler, because I can't. I can't shit on him. Unless he asked me to. But a team. Anyway. I gotta get the fuck out of here. Thanks for stopping by. I'm Amanda.
I'm Brady.
And we can't wait to talk to you next time.
And we love you.